Welcome to Season 3 of History Books and Wine. I'm your host, Eliza Knight. Join me for weekly happy hours with our guests as we discuss three of my favorite things, history, books, and wine. So pour a glass of vino and let's dive into the past. Hello there, history books and wine lovers. This is your host, Eliza Knight here, and I can't wait for this summer because I have a brand new book coming out. As you know, one of the reasons Lori and I started this podcast was our love of wine, history, and books. And guess what? I'm not just a podcast host, I'm also an author. So I have to ask you, do you like royals? How about corgis? Releasing on June 11th is my book, The Queen's Faithful Companion, an endearing and vivid story told from the unique multi-narrative viewpoints of a young Queen Elizabeth, Hannah Fenwick, the fictionalized keeper of the Queen's corgis, and yes, Susan, the Queen's corgi, whose love and loyalty were boundless. A reigning queen, a loyal servant, and a faithful companion, this is one book you're not going to want to miss. Early readers can't get enough of the Queen's corgis, and I admit, I'm also completely obsessed. Right now, you can pre-order The Queen's Faithful Companion anywhere books are sold, or you can visit my website, www.elizaknight.com, to pre-order there. Happy reading! Today, we're excited to have a guest joining us, author Joan Meyerson. On this episode, we're going to talk about Paris, Hollywood, and the film industry in the 1960s and 1970s. Welcome, Joan.
Hello, so nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
We're so glad to have you. But before we dive into this intriguing episode, we always like to talk about what we're drinking. So Joan, why don't you go first?
Okay, what I'm having to drink. All right, well, because we're talking about Paris, I think champagne would be the perfect drink.
Ooh, yes.
However, it's not 5 o'clock in the afternoon, although someplace in the world it is. So I'm just going to be thinking about what would be the best thing. And because there's also, and it's a very difficult decision because there's also French wine and Pinot Noir is my favorite on that one.
Oh, I love Pinot Noir.
But the one that I really think that I would be drinking is a very special martini. It has inspired me to finish writing my novel. It happened in the Hemingway Bar in Paris at the Hotel Ritz. If you've ever been there, I don't know. But I had to go as part of my research, of course.
You know, yes.
And we all know the story of Hemingway at the end of World War II, leading the troops after Paris was liberated, straight to the Ritz Bar, to the Hotel Ritz, to have a drink. And so he also became known for his famous martini that he loved. So that's what I would be having. I would be having his Hemingway martini, which is a very dry martini with two olives. But the real reason why I chose this drink is because there is this actual typewriter in the Hemingway bar.
Oh, cool.
And I told the maitre d' what I was doing, my research. He sat me right next to the typewriter. So with one hand on the typewriter and the other hand with the martini, I toasted to writers in the world.
Oh, I love that. That's the best. That's really cool. And did you take a picture of the typewriter?
I do. Ooh. And if you go, I do have a website, by the way. So it's this joanmeyerson.com. And I do have the picture of me toasting on that.
Oh, that's cool. Well, all listeners, you'll have to go find that picture on her website because that sounds like a really fun one.
Yeah.
I am having a Pinot Grigio today. It's a Giuliano Rosati. I just liked the label. It was pretty plain, but the writing on it was kind of historical looking, and I love stuff like that.
That sounds good. I love Pinot Grigio.
It's so good. I'm kind of dreaming that it's summer, even though it's freezing here. So I'm like having my summer wine, like hoping to put out those vibes into the world. So today we're going to chat about your book, Who Needs Paris, which was a fabulous read. Can you talk to us about what your book is about and how you came up with the idea to tell the story?
Yes. Okay, well, sort of backwards here about how, first I was inspired, it was, writing the book, it was inspired by the two times that I lived in Paris in the 60s when I studied at the Sorbonne. And then 13 years later, when I returned to Paris in 1977, and I was a grown-up. And yes. I thought I was a grown-up, but I might not have been acting like one, which that was the fun of it, I guess, probably. But yes. Anyway, it was these two periods in my life turned out to be very important to me. And they really opened me up to a different world in two different ways. Sometimes I felt like I was in a movie. It was, you know, just wonderful. And then other times life was not easy, especially in the 60s. Mm-hmm. But they were very formative times for me and unforgettable. And so as time went on in my life, I ended up producing and writing documentaries and other TV programs and telling the stories of other people. That's what I love to do. But finally, I decided, I kept thinking about these two times in my life, and I finally decided it's time to tell my own stories. And so that's how it came to be. And it is a story. What happened to me is a character began to form in my mind, sort of my alter ego. Her name is Kate. And Kate is the heroine of my novel, and she works in documentaries. She's smart, she's clever, but on the inside there's the dark memories of her days at the Sorbonne. And she's been shut down for a long time, and so ever since she came back from from France when she was young, she's avoided Paris like the plague. But 13 years later, you know, as she's just decided that she has to do something about her life because she's been shut down all this time, and she's offered a job in Paris, and she knows it might be a chance to free herself of those memories. And surprise, it turns out to be a beautiful Paris of opportunity, of romance, even a little spicy sex, if I could say that.
Yes.
And of empowerment. And she really begins to reinvent herself. She works at the Deauville Film Festival. There's a lot of fun things happening where she has to interview celebrity stars like Gregory Peck. And she begins to reinvent herself to see that she can also play other characters just like Gregory Peck did. But it's still hard to get rid of the ghosts of that past. And ultimately, she's going to have to confront them. And our heroine, of course, well, I don't want to spoil the end of the book, so...
I think readers will really enjoy following Kate's story and watching all, you know, how her past and her present are colliding and all the changes that are going on. So you mentioned that you have a background in film and documentary making. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? And would you say that your professional experience lent itself to the inspiration for this novel?
Oh, absolutely, I think. Well, I never grew up thinking I was going to go into documentaries, but I was a history major because I loved the stories that I would hear, and I became a history major. But then I ended up with a summer job, I never went back to graduate school because history can be wonderful, but can also, if it's not in the right hands, or if you're studying to, you know, get a master's degree, it becomes very specific and detailed and not really about real life stories, or at least that's was my experience. Anyway, I ended up with a job at a big documentary film company, and I loved it. And that became my film school. So I went to produce, and finally produce, direct, write documentaries. I did a lot of things for PBS, including the National Memorial Day concert, in which I would interview veterans and widows and children who had lost their parents in war. And I would have the most wonderful stories and so inspiring. And I kept thinking, this is the real thing to do. And so, but as I say, it became time to tell my own story. And but the background of doing documentaries, I think, really helped me when I started writing the book.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to have things that were real. I wanted it to be authentic. And
I think readers will appreciate that. The authenticity of it really does shine through.
Yes. Did a lot of research. And that's also the great thing about doing that, is that means you have to go back to Paris.
Yes.
It's a good excuse, right?
For real. So part of your book touches on women's sexuality and rights, and there's mentions of the Kinsey Report and a certain documentary regarding sex and how the body responds. I have to say this actually brought me back to my college days because I was studying the psychology of human sexuality, and we actually did watch a medical documentary of two people having intercourse, and it did kind of look like it was made in the 70s just from like the hairstyles. But I'm curious, have you seen this video and did you know of its existence before writing the book?
No, I didn't. I mean, I'm very happy to hear that was being done.
It's so funny.
Where were you in college? I didn't see that video. Where were you in college?
I went to college at the University of Maryland.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, this was actually, as I say, this was a really, when people read this, it really happened.
Yeah.
I was working for a French producer, and he was doing stories in California. He was adamant. The 70s were a very open-minded and liberal era. Yeah. And so I can see why you would think that it was seemed like a 70s film. A lot of freedom going on. And
yes.
If you ever heard of the Chippendales Dancers, you know,
yes.
That was going on. And we would do little films about all these new things that were happening in California and Los Angeles, and that our French director was sure we're going to then come to France and liberate it from its stultification and, you know, its morality and all that. So anyway, there was at UCLA, there was a professor who did probably those kind of classes that you had. But they were also doing research on sexuality. And so it did happen. But it was for a French television program. So I
That's
never
so
showed the United States.
I also find, like, when I travel to Europe, you know, England, Scotland, Ireland, France are the most of the places that I've visited. The TV shows there are, like, much more, like, into the body and sexuality and stuff than what you would find on American television. I find it to be funny and interesting, too. Like, lots of naked shows.
That's right. I mean, you're bringing back a memory for me because I remember going to Paris both times, I think. And, you know, they have all these kiosks where they have all their advertisements on the kiosks throughout the city. And there were so many pictures, I'm remembering now, of bare-breasted women. You know, they were advertising some perfume or a hairdo or something like that.
They just don't care.
It's very much more open.
Much more free.
Yes.
So the themes in this book touch on women's rights and female empowerment. Can you talk to us about that and what you want readers to take away from the novel?
Well, yeah, because I think there was a part of me, of course, as we talked about, that I wanted to write the story of that was inspired by the real life. But part of that was a lot of fun. It was the charm of Paris. It was the excitement of being there. It was romance. It was all those wonderful things. But I also wanted it to be about real life. It's not all life. It's not always great, you know?
Yeah.
And in the 60s, especially, it was a very, very bourgeois society. Their values, they kept France in a culture where you only did things in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but not only was abortion illegal, just as it was in the United States, also contraceptives were illegal in the 60s, beginning of the 60s. It wasn't until 1967, I think, that contraceptives were finally made legal. You could even be sent to prison for it. I mean, it was that terrible. Yeah. So I always wanted to write the kind of novel I like to read, which I call a smart woman's beach read. And
oh,
that
like
means
that.
It's fun, but it's also real. And that was the issue. And it was during the time that I was there. There were a lot of young women like me that had to make those kinds of decisions and had to end up, you know, doing the unthinkable.
Right.
So I wanted to do that. And as I was writing too, it took me a long time to write this novel because I would always end up stopping because I had a job and then I'd go back to the novel and then I'd have a job and go back to the novel. And, Roe v. Wade, at the time when I first started, there was no thought that that would ever be overturned. I mean, we thought we were home free, right? Yeah. And we had our own rights to our own bodies. But as years went on, it became more and more important, I thought, and relevant to our world today. And that's why I wanted to really include it into the book, because it really becomes the core of the book. And
it's our
protagonist's fight to be able to confront that, to be able to say it, because so many years women have been shamed into silence. They couldn't talk. They wouldn't talk about it. They wouldn't do anything about it. And it's wasn't right. And so she becomes part of that group that finally does confront what happened and go move on with it. And then for me too, as I'm writing it, I wanted to reach out to those women who remember what happened. And in fact, a friend of mine read the book, and it had happened to her years and years ago, and she ended up by saying after she read the book that it was better that reading that book was better therapy than any therapist she'd ever gone to.
Oh my goodness. I love that.
So I felt that really we needed to do that. That's the core of the story.
Yeah. And I think a lot of readers, you know, both people who have lived through that and understand it from their own core, but also people, you know, who haven't been through it and are going through it now will understand that and appreciate it. So I think that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, it's for the younger generation too, you know, cause they're facing the big fight.
Right.
And they need to be encouraged.
Yeah,
to
I agree.
To go on. So it's for both the older women and the new ones, new younger women. it's their life, yeah.
It's for all women, right?
For all women, yes.
So you mentioned traveling to Paris, of course, for research, as well as having lived there before. Can you tell us what parts of the city are your favorite and which parts made it into the book?
Oh God, you're really, you're making this a very tough decision.
Oh no, you can have more than one favorite.
It's all good.
You know, everything.
So each quartier, I think they have their own character. But I guess if I had to really come down to it, I would go with the places where I actually lived, you know, I mean, and so it's the left bank for me, you know, I mean, it's just, kind of got that bohemian but and also older cultural feeling to it. There's still all the old buildings, the old shops, the cobblestone streets, and I love just walking around that area, but it's because it's still so atmospheric. And it's also very close to the Seine. You can cross over the bridge, and then you can be right at the Louvre, or not too far away, walk to the Champs-Élysées. So I could go on and on. I mean, any place you see the Eiffel Tower, that's a great place.
That's a perfect place.
Right. Or any place. I mean, there's just everything is, there's the opera that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And there's the Champs-Élysées to walk around where there's lots of tourists, but it's all very active and lively. And I mean, there's probably not one part of Paris that I don't like, you know.
Yeah.
But I always end up sort of staying in the Saint-Germain area. That's sort of my favorite, in the Latin Quarter.
I love that. I traveled to Paris a lot as a child because my grandparents lived there. And when Kate is eating a crepe with Nutella, I was like, oh, I remember that. So it was like such a great book for me too, to like reminisce on places that I had been to.
That's great. Yeah. There's nothing like Nutella, right?
Oh, yes. So what was your favorite part of writing and researching this novel?
My favorite part of writing? I guess what, as we were talking about, one of the things, my favorite part was the fact that I had a reason to go back to Paris, you know, just to soak in this atmosphere.
Yeah.
And then I got to go back to, I had to go back to the places where I had lived, you know, and take pictures of them and incorporate them into my novel. So again, it would be an authentic thing. And so that became important areas in Paris that I would go to just to really, to remember, to remember that it would bring back the memories, like you did, like you said, bring back the memories and help me to write a more authentic, fun book, I think.
That's
fun. It was real.
I love that. So thank you so much for sharing those fascinating answers. Joan, why don't you tell us three fun facts you discovered during your research?
Now, this was the fun part. Research. Google, last night, Google helped me find these things, I have to admit.
Oh, yay.
All right. Did you know McDonald's of any European country? I think there's the most McDonald's in France. In the other country.
Oh my gosh, really?
And that, but not only that, the fact is that you can actually get a beer and a croissant at the same time. At a McDonald's. Now, where else?
Okay, that's awesome.
I don't think there's any place in the United States at the McDonald's where you can get that.
No, but if they started serving croissants, I might try one.
Try it. And then the Louvre is the biggest art museum in the world.
It's beautiful.
And it is. And you can spend like a week there and still not see everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then
for sure.
The last one has to be my favorite. There is one dog for every 7 Parisians in Paris.
Oh, my goodness. That's a lot of dogs.
And they say, so there's more than 300,000 dogs in Paris.
Oh, my goodness. That is a lot of dogs. And I love dogs. I have 2 of them. So I'm totally like cool with that. But that is a lot. I would be really curious to know what it was like in the U.S. So I'll have to Google that.
So, yeah, those were fun facts, I guess. Especially, yes, maybe
those are great.
Maybe you want to take my dog to Paris.
Put
her in this little carrier. But unfortunately.
It's a carrier around with your like little... cute little bag. Yes. Or lately I've seen people pushing their dogs in dog strollers.
Oh yes, I've seen a lot of that. And I'm hoping it's not because they can't walk, or maybe they're just being,
I know. Well, it's funny because my dogs right now are way too big to fit into a stroller, but when I had a boxer, he would get really tired on our walks, and I'd be pushing my like toddler in a stroller, and he would get into the basket underneath of the stroller, like where you might store your purse or something, and he would curl up in there for the rest of the ride.
Well, he was smart. He was smart. He knew what to do.
He was
a free ride. Yeah,
right.
That's great. Yeah.
Thank you. So is there anything else you'd like to share with us about your book, Who Needs Paris?
I don't want to spoil the story for people who are reading it. So I'm not sure exactly what. I mean, I've gotten some, I'm very proud of them, some beautiful reviews of the book. And I think once people read them, they'll see them. They're actually, some of the blurbs, as they call it, are in the front of the book. But there's one from this review place called Kirkus, which is really objective. There is a sentence that I really love. And we do go back and forth in time, you know, every chapter.
Yes.
Back and forth in time.
Yeah.
And in this case, wait a minute, I think I have it. Yes. Okay, here it is. And a lot of times these kind of going back and forth in time get confusing. But what Kirkus says is, the author's use of 2 concurrent timelines is masterful, pacing the story in an exciting way that hooks the reader. Myers and Crafts, a satisfying story of love, redemption, and finding oneself. So I hope everyone that's listening to this wants to read the book then.
I think they will. And I think you did do a seamless job with going back and forth in time. It was really easy to follow.
Thank you.
So. Well done.
It was a challenge, but it was fun. A fun challenge.
It was great. So we are writers, but we're also readers. So we always like to ask our guests, what are you reading currently?
Okay. Yes. I'm reading... These are books that I've just recently read, but I'm still now looking to see what I'm going to read next. But Stephen King, who usually writes horror stories, latest book, Fairy Tale, I read, which is really fun. It's a fairy tale.
Fairy tale that goes off
in different directions.
I like that.
And Kurt Vonnegut, Breakfast of Champions. He you know, it was a while ago he wrote that, but it's a classic. And one of my favorite current books, which I actually read a little while ago, but I still love it, is Where the Crawdads Sing, by Julia Owens.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, too. Books.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Those sound like a good reading on your list. So why don't you tell our readers again where they can find you?
Okay. Well, go to my website. Joan, it's very simple, joanmeyerson.com. Just remember Meyerson spelled with an E, M-E-Y-E-R-S-O-N, because a lot of people spell it differently. You can buy a book. Any bookstore can order a book for you, or you can just click on Amazon.com and get it that way. And
perfect.
I think that's but there is a place. If you go to my website, there is a one of the links that says contact me, and you can contact me through that link. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and for giving us all these amazing facts about your research and your book in Paris and sharing all the information. It's been really great chatting with you, and I loved your book, so I'm sure that the listeners will enjoy it.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
You're very welcome.
It was wonderful talking with you too, especially for somebody who's lived in Paris and who's seen films on intercourse. You're my kind of lady.
It was definitely a trip down memory lane for me to read your book. So we hope you've enjoyed today's episode with our guest author, Joan Meyerson. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the rest of this season's lineup. Coming up, we have several guests joining us for Happy Hour: Harper St. George, Tosca Lee, and Marcus Brotherton. Bye! For more information about today's episode, including our guests' links and book buy links, click on the show notes. Follow the podcast on Instagram at History Books and Wine and Facebook at History Books and Wine for additional historical tidbits and updates. If you like what you heard today, please leave a review. Don't forget to subscribe to the show wherever you download your favorite episodes. That way you're notified every time a new episode is live. Subscribes and reviews help this podcast get noticed. Thank you for tuning in to this week's Happy Hour. Until next time, cheers and happy reading.